Welcome back to Ask the Educator, a podcast for all professionals involved in medical device processing and sponsored by Healthmark Industries. The education team here at Healthmark has 280 years of combined experience in areas ranging from sterile processing, endoscopy, OR, biomed, to hospital and industry leadership. Our goal is to leverage our collective experience to answer one of your questions each episode, giving you the practical tips you need to succeed in the evolving world of device processing. My name is Kevin Anderson, clinical educator here at Healthmark, and I will be your host. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Kevin Anderson here. Joining me today, I have Jake McHugh. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to give you a chance to kind of introduce yourself and let the audience know who you are. So, Jake, just tell us, how long have you been in sterile processing, the industry as a whole?
Well, thank you for inviting me, but I've been in sterile processing for over 14 years, Massachusetts and Florida. I have the Isham Golden Crown certification.
That's excellent. Congratulations on that. When did you get your last certification?
Ooh, that probably was like a year or two ago, the certified endoscope reprocessor one.
Excellent. Well, that was the newest one, right? You're certified through Isham, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Yep. So Jake, what is it that you're doing right now? I kind of saw your job title and I thought it was pretty interesting. There might be some other facilities out there that have this too, but I wasn't so sure. I know that we didn't have it in my former facility. So why don't you just go ahead and introduce what your job title is and kind of just in general, what that entails.
So my job title right now is tracking system coordinator. And basically I'm in charge for my hospital of rolling out and watching the tracking system. So if there are new areas we want to put it out, different areas of the hospital like GI, ultrasound radiology, different areas of the OR, I would be in charge of formulating that and rolling it out, as well as educating people on updates, system changes that might be coming from the system as well, and kind of troubleshooting if need be.
Excellent. Yeah, that, in my opinion, is one of those positions that obviously you wouldn't maybe have if you didn't have instrument tracking, but once you have it, instrument tracking as a whole, whether it's just one hospital or one health system, man, what a great asset it would be to have somebody in that role. So congratulations on such a cool job title, number one. But one of the reasons that I kind of reached out to you about this interview was because I had heard that you were doing some different things with data collection, which obviously is something that instrument tracking allows you to do. So basically what I wanted to do was give you an opportunity to share some of the different data points that you're keeping track of for your departments, whether it's quality data, just performance, any of that stuff. What kind of things are you keeping track of?
So a lot of the different things we track, we have a departmental scorecard. So we do track errors, the different variety of errors that we get, and we track how many trays we sterilize per month to kind of give us a monthly score for the department to see how well we're doing. Other things that we're tracking, we're watching the employees, how many trays they're processing, trying to find the highs and lows of what we're doing throughout the week so we can staff accordingly later on.
I'd like to ask you about your scorecard first. You mentioned you mentioned that you're doing this scorecard. What exactly does that look like? So do you take the number of trays and the number of errors divided and come up with an error rate? Or what exactly does your scorecard look like? Does it look like, is it something for the department as a whole, or is it something for each individual, or maybe it's both?
So exactly that. So we do for the whole department, and we've been doing this for years. It's where it all started, was gathering the errors, taking how many trays that we've processed for that month and dividing the errors by that number. So we get basically our error rate and we turn that into our percentage. I've been tracking that over a number of months into years now. I think we're going on a decade.
Really? Wow. That's fantastic.
Yep. And so, you know, doing that for so long, I started to wonder, like, what else? You know, I can tell you how well our department's doing, but I started to want to find what was happening with the errors. You know, what were the trends via, was it trays that were getting the same errors? Was it people, you know, were watching the errors? Was it time of day? So I started recording with each error, not only what the error was, but I would go back into the tracking system and I would find the date and the time that that tray was assembled. So now I could have a separate chart and start to track out, you know, what's the trend of errors being made? So then I can find the high point and the low point of the department. Where do we need to focus on for education? Where might there be issues on a day-to-day basis?
That's awesome, Jake. And I got to tell you, this is something that I was really kind of excited and a little bit nerdy about when I was managing my department as well. I was really interested in, you know, kind of statistics about how we were doing. I don't know if that's because I used to love, I still love baseball and following players and trying to figure out, you know, how well they're doing. And I always wondered why we weren't doing more of that in sterile processing. It seems like a really data-rich environment, and there's a lot of opportunity for analysis of data like that. So I'm just curious, like, when you started doing that and kind of taking it in those other directions, did you end up learning anything along the way that kind of surprised you? Were there problem trays or maybe a problem on a specific shift? Or what kind of things did you end up discovering with that amount of data analytics going on?
So we definitely found some flags that we noticed. There was shift changes were always a high point, especially at that 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock timeframe where, you know, first shift's getting tired, second shift's coming in, but also the OR is getting to their end of day. So all their trays are coming down and, you know, we have pre-cleaned issues and mixed up trays. So there's a lot more challenges coming in. Some other things we found were definitely, you know, newer techs and travelers tended to make quite a bit of issues at the beginning of their stay. So we had to focus more in on those people. Not so much like day of the week wouldn't be a regular trend, but you could definitely see the amounts of trays being processed shift on a long-term basis. So like maybe one quarter, Wednesday would be our highest sterilization day for quite some time. And then it would shift to Thursday and then back again.
So that's an interesting observation with your data. It sounds like something that, you know, might be able to help you or prompt you in terms of your staffing. Is that something that I think you even mentioned it a little bit earlier, some ability there to staff kind of proactively to these volume shifts? And was that something that you were able to accomplish with this?
Yeah, actually. So we were able to identify that usually Mondays and Fridays were probably our lower days. So we would staff any travelers or people that worked 10 and 12s on Wednesday and Thursdays more often than a Monday or a Friday, because that's where most of the work was to get done. We also ended up doing a long-term, it probably took about a year, project with administration to kind of prove that we needed more staff. And that was an ordeal. That took so much new data that we had to start looking at. So tracking, you know, how many trays we were doing per day, how many staffing we already had. And we also started to track and still to keep track of how many trays were left over from the previous day. So we kind of knew with this many people, we could get this much done, but we still had this much left over. And looking at, you know, trays, instruments, scopes, and peel packs differently.
That's interesting, Jake, because I want to ask you a little bit about that, only because I think productivity and justifying FTEs is something that's kind of a universal challenge in SPD. And I think also what's common is that those folks usually are in HR or administration that are kind of holding our FTE requests and waiting to approve them. And normally they're going off of maybe surgical volume or some other metric. And we all kind of understand, like, surgical volume is not necessarily the best metric for SPD productivity or justification for FTEs. So I think it's pretty interesting that you were able to collect all this different data to help them see that maybe there was another need for more FTEs there. So what exactly did that look like? Like, how did that start? Were you guys actually using, you know, surgical volume as a justification, and then you were trying to change that, and that's why they were asking for all this data and it took like a longer time than normal? What did that look like exactly?
So what it kind of broke down to is that we started planning for the future, and we got, the department was called Systems and Processes involved, and basically asking them to help us build up an ask for more full-time employees. And so they started working with us and getting, you know, what data points we could we get, trying to help them explain. And we had worked with them on some other projects, so they had an idea of what was going on. And then when we were bringing it to administration and HR, you know, they kept on asking for different points because they want to get down. They basically want full-on proof. And, you know, we have the instrument data, but it's very hard to translate that from our knowledge base to theirs. But just every time that they would ask for something different, you know, we'd have to dig it through the tracking system if we weren't already tracking for it, and then bring it back to them the next meeting and going from there.
So just off the top of your head, I know I'm maybe putting you on the spot a little bit, but what kind of stuck out to you as some of the data points that they were asking for that kind of stick out to you that were maybe a little bit different than just obviously surgical volume? What did they want to know?
So they wanted to know, you know, trays processed, scopes processed. We brought down, we also did peel packs, but we started looking at peel packs as being like every 10 equaled one tray, so that, because they're, I wouldn't say they're necessarily equal
right
to a full size container, but also looking at, you know, averages per week, like what are the trends throughout the week of what's being available to process, kind of like what I already brought up, how many staffing we had. One of the things that we really focused on was how many staffing we had for assembly, because there are different areas of the department and we had our areas that we had to staff. So decontam, scope room, clinic areas, and then sterilization, the things that we had to get done, and then assembly kind of filtered in the rest. Because if you don't have anybody running sterilizers, you can do trays all day long, but nobody's able to sterilize them. And we kind of started working with how many people we had in that prep and pack assembly area, and trying to figure out from there how many trays we could assemble on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's interesting because as you know, in every kind of, well, you've worked in different states even, and we've been mm-hmm. through different departments, and even my department was different than others within our same health system in terms of volumes, right? So our mothership, if you will, which it wasn't the one I was in charge of, they could have literally been full staff all the time and probably never caught up because they were doing surgeries in the middle of the night, whereas ours were emergency only in the middle of the night. And when we came in the morning, it was almost unusual to have a backlog of trays. So trays from yesterday that didn't get finished all the way through the point of sterilization. They would get decontaminated and they would be waiting for the staff in the morning. And pretty unusual to see any sort of large number of trays waiting as a backlog from the day before. But there are places where it's in the hundreds, you know, and it never goes down. So it's one of those things where it's like, if you have a capacity of staff, then you're basically, you need the entire capacity all the time. And, you know, obviously it might have been a little bit different at your facility because you had some room there to play and some need for justification, at least on the data side.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that work out for you? Were you able to, you know, eventually get what you need? Or are you still using traveling techs and all of that? Or were you guys able to successfully justify your needs?
So we were able to successfully justify needs. We definitely, you know, asked for a lot and they kind of gave us half of that.
Okay.
But that was still fantastic. But then having that information, having that communication, and knowing a little bit more of what they wanted, we would continually go back and say, okay, look, now that we have these staff, this is where we are now. You're increasing volumes, we need to keep on, you know, being able to hire more staffing or have travelers to kind of offload the workload.
So I just thought of another question, and hopefully I don't throw you for a loop here, but you did a lot of work to justify getting the staff, and you're always documenting and following and tracking your quality numbers, which is fantastic. So hopefully this kind of, maybe you see where I'm going here, but have you also noticed that once you got those FTEs and the staff that, even though it wasn't 100% of what you may have wanted or needed, are you noticing that your quality has gotten better, or is it just that the target got moved again because your volume's continuously increasing now and you're kind of, you know, staying flat with your quality numbers? What have you noticed there?
A bit of a mixture. So, you know, you get all this new staffing, the OR still increasing their case volumes.
Right.
The new staff have to learn all the ins and outs. They're going to make errors. So there's always a little bit of a peak or an uptick in errors, but there's also a lot more reprocessing. So it does take quite a few weeks for things to kind of straighten themselves out, but the trend does start to go down. You start seeing less errors, there's more people, there's more resources, but it's not overnight by any means.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's a very important point, because I think that people always think, oh, if we just had all these resources, the quality will get better. But I think it's always a mix of things. It's having those resources, but it's also staying on top of the education, getting those people trained, and staying on top of quality and finding out what's really going on and what's wrong. I can think of so many examples. I won't share them all, but, you know, even just finding out, like, you know, a certain tech who didn't get training on a certain instrument, and that instrument was a modular laparoscopic instrument, and, you know, it kept going up to the OR and it wasn't working. It wasn't put together correctly. And we just had to come and do some extra training with them. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you can't just throw resources at the problem and expect all the quality to shape up. You got to get yourself through that hump and get the training, the education, and all those things in alignment. But one of the things that you can't do all of that without, in my opinion, without doing all the tracking that you're doing. So I just wanted to really spotlight all those different things that you're doing with the data there. I think that's really important. So you've been tracking quality on an individual basis, quality on a departmental basis. You've been able to work with that data in order to get your FTEs. So that's a lot of different stuff. And I think that those are ideas that we wanted to be able to highlight and share through this podcast. So I just want to say kudos to you and your team. I think that's fantastic work. And I did want to give you one sort of final, you know, chance or whatever to share whatever else might be in the back of your mind when it comes to the data, anything that you were surprised by, anything that you would really like to encourage the audience to start doing that was really meaningful for you and your facility, what would that be?
So I'm going to cover kind of two topics. One was really wanting to get down to looking at the services of the OR. Started pulling out, you know, the number of trays, the number of instruments we processed for each individual service per month. And then I asked, you know, the financial people if they could send me the number of cases that each service did per month. And I would start to extrapolate, you know, for all these cases, they did all these trays, all these instruments to find out the average number of everything that they're using for the most part. And then I would take our error data and I would match that up with the services. And what you could see is, you know, you'd have heavy services like ortho,
right,
who would be complaining about, you know, we have so many errors. Why is this happening? And you look at the data and they do so many trays, so many cases, so many instruments, you know, they're going to have more errors usually than other services. But what was interesting is that the percentage of some other services that didn't do as many was higher. And those are the things that you have to watch out for, because it's just, what are the issues that are going on with them and why, you know, how can you fix that? Because obviously that's an outlier. If they're doing more cases, but getting more errors on a percentage-wise basis, that's not good for patient outcomes.
Right.
So how can you focus on that? And you can also bring that back to, say, ortho and say, hey, look, yes, you are getting errors. We need to work on that. But, you know, it is, look at the number of trays that you're using. Look at the number of instruments that you guys are using and that we're reprocessing on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm interested just to, when you talk about ortho, did you have any problems with retained bone cement? Was that one of your common issues?
Oh yeah, that's always an issue.
Yeah, see, I figured, and that's why I threw it out there, because, you know, they need to, one of the things that we talk about in our webinars and all of that is point of use care. And that's one thing where we find that's pretty consistent throughout most facilities, honestly, is their point of use care in relation to bone cement and orthopedic, you know, reamers and things like that, that just mm-hmm. get grossly soiled. But that bone cement, what they need to realize, right, is there is no ultrasonic, no washer, no brush that just brushes that stuff off. It needs to be, once it's solidified on there, it takes nothing but elbow grease and maybe an osteotome or something like that. And you don't really want to go down that road, but, you know, it is mm-hmm. what it is. And really, they should be taking it off right there in the operating room, ideally.
Yeah. Or it just gets replaced because it's a lost cause.
That's right. I did have an instrument like that. It was pretty brutal and we had to just get rid of it. But I don't want to distract you from your second point. What was that second thing you wanted to share with us before we wrap up?
So the second point is I encourage everybody to start trying to track something. And you're not going to, you know, see the wall chart with the strings and the pins and how everything matches up and everything makes sense. It just takes collecting data over time. You start recording, you know, this is how many trays, this is how many instruments we processed. If you can break it down to different, if you have multiple areas within your hospital, what's each area doing? And then, you know, for myself, every year I go back and I say, what piece of data can I add that would help me figure things out? And, you know, maybe, you know, 6 months into a year, there'll be a question that's raised and be like, do we know how much we're tracking, or why is this a problem? And, you know, you might have to go back and pull a lot of data, but it's just going through and doing a little bit every day, collecting it into an Excel sheet of some sort until you need it.
Yeah, I think that's great, Jake. And I couldn't agree more. You know, no matter whether or not you have an instrument tracking system or not, you can still collect data without instrument tracking. Of course, it's a helpful tool and you can get down to to some more granular levels with it for sure. I don't want to discredit that at all, but I also don't want to discourage people who don't have that into not tracking anything. I'll tell you, when I first started as a manager in SPD, all we tracked was IUSS, and that doesn't tell you a whole lot. That's a very, very small part of the story, and there's a lot of opportunity there. And like most people understand, if you don't track anything, you don't know how you're going to improve it, and you can't prove that you improved anything either. You're just kind of, it's just all hearsay and all guesswork. So major, major kudos to you guys. And that's a fantastic point. And I would definitely second that, and that really want to encourage people out there to do these things.
Yeah. No, nobody in the department that's going to have the ability to give you the funds to do anything is going to be like, okay, we'll give you money if you just ask them, hey, we need more staff. Hey, we need more trays. They're not going to do it. They're going to want to see the data.
That's right. And what department can't relate to needing something, whether it's equipment, whether it's employees, whether it's some other resource. And you're absolutely right. You need to be able to go in there with some sort of business case. And in order to do that, you need some sort of data. Jake, this discussion that we've been having about data is really important. And I know that, you know, people out there who are listening, they could maybe easily get overwhelmed if they don't have a lot of data collection or quality metrics going on in their department. So I think it's really important. You had mentioned earlier in the podcast that it's a good idea to just start somewhere and build from there. And that's, I couldn't agree more. But there's another component to that that I think is really important. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to share another reason why you've been able to be so successful in collecting all this data and doing meaningful things with it. So why don't you share a little bit of another tip that's really important for others who want to do this kind of work?
Sure. One of the other things we do with it is that we also use the data to recognize high-performing individuals, both for the department as a whole and individuals when we can. And I also want to mention that nobody works in a vacuum. A lot of these projects and others wouldn't be possible without the help of my counterparts in the department.
I love that you said the part about this not being possible without your counterparts in the department. It's so true. Whether it's people reporting or helping you collect data, all of those things feed into all of your reports and make it possible to then recognize high performance or help coach others into a higher performance, those types of things.
Yep. And I'm willing to say, if anybody out there needs help tracking, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll share what formulas I use. I'll share the graphs that I use on my daily basis so that you can use them in your hospital. You know, everybody makes errors. Everybody's processing. And we just got to figure out a way to track it all. And I also wanted to bring up that you can catch me, Joanne, Rebecca, and Sarah on the Clubhouse app every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You heard it. Jake's offering some help with it. And again, you shared another great social media outlet there for people to get involved in and listen to more conversations around the sterile processing industry with people like yourself, Joanne, Rebecca, and Sarah on Clubhouse. I mean, it's just a real exciting time in education in general, whether it's webinars or virtual programs and things like that, podcasts. I just encourage anyone to get out there, listen to their program on Clubhouse every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you have any questions about how to listen to that, Jake is more than willing to help you find out how to get there. Jake, again, great guest on the show. Thank you so much for doing this. And I really appreciate everything you're doing out there in sterile processing as well.
Thank you.
That wraps up our interview with Tracking System Coordinator Jake McHugh. Remember to reach out to him on LinkedIn if you have any more questions about his data collecting and analysis practices. I want to thank you all for listening to the show. Please remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
All opinions expressed on this show are those of the presenters. Before using any medical device, it is important to review the device manufacturer's instructions for use.